All right, we're going to go to European matters, not the singing in Basel, but Simon Harris was off to Europe meeting trade ministers, and there's 95 billion euro of European goods hanging in the mix. Is it 95 billion euro of US goods, sorry, on which...
Sorry, I was so good with the first answer. You're coming to me again, Colm, of
course. Yes, I am indeed, yeah.
So Simon Harris was meeting his fellow trade ministers in Brussels today, and essentially what they're discussing is a very long list of products that may be that may come under the envelope of reciprocal tariffs. And yes, they do total 95 billion in all when they're taught up. Simon Harris said today there were 5,000 items across 200 pages. So there's a lot to be discussed. When he was asked about the items that Ireland will try to avoid, he referred to aviation, he referred to medical devices, and of course anything to do with pharma medical devices is spells a great risk for Ireland. And he also talked about agri-food and agri-food produce, and I presume, even though he didn't mention it by name, I think bourbon probably comes into that ambit as well. So he said we're halfway through the 90-day pause. There are still universal tariffs of 10% being applied by the states, so the European Union want them to get rid of that. So he said the preference for the European Union would be for a trade deal where zero tariffs would be applied. And then that list, that reciprocal list, could be torn up. But we haven't really got to that stage yet. And he also issued a warning to President Trump that if the United States tried escalatory measures like imposing fresh tariffs on pharma or medical products being exported from the EU to the US, that would be something that would have been done in incredibly bad faith, and it would invite a response from the European Union.
Okay, Michael McNamara, the the European preference would obviously be for unanimity in its approach. Do you think perhaps people looking for carve-outs or protection of individual member states' goods would go down well, or even get any soot at all?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's going to go down well, but I mean, I think every country is going to be trying to protect its own interests. I mean, that's essentially what the Council is about. I mean, that's why it exists, so the countries can articulate their priorities and try and protect their interests, and I'm sure that's what will be happening.
All right, Barry Ward.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually important that we do that, that we defend our interests. And that's the job that the Tánaiste had to do over there. I think I have long said about this whole debacle that has been perpetrated by President Trump, that actually it will do the United States as much, if not more, damage than it's done to Europe. And that's something that doesn't seem to have hit home yet, notwithstanding the fact that they've already seen inflationary pressures, they've already seen cost of living pressures within the United States, and the fact that a lot of the companies that they're proposing to tax are exporting vital products to the United States, and they are going to massively increase the prices of those products, whether it's as a component or as a whole product, for ordinary US consumers, which would arguably fly in the face of exactly what he campaigned on in the election last year.
All right. What approach should he be taking, Sinead Gibney?
Well, I agree that he absolutely has to be present in Brussels and expressing Ireland's interests and specific vulnerabilities, which we all know exist. I think he also should be looking for allies, you know, where there are countries who have similar vulnerabilities. We need to seek them out. And then, of course, need to be looking at both supply chain and alternate markets for potentially hit sectors of the Irish, business sector. So, like, I think, you know, those are the obvious things he's doing. We are in a very different moment, though, as you say, now halfway through this 90-day pause, but we've seen Trump's pattern. He makes a big announcement. He wants to then go and, within that context, essentially seal a win, or make it look like he's sealing a win with these different trade partners, which he can then sell back to his base at home. And that's what he's been about from day one. And so I think it's, but that's not to say that, of course, the uncertainty and volatility that he has created through his measures and his these ridiculous tariffs, like, are causing mayhem for businesses, and Irish interests must be protected in Brussels.
Is there an argument, Michael McNamara, to go in hard for people to take pain in the short term and see if Donald Trump perhaps buckles like he did with China?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Europe's leverage, I think, is somewhat different to China's. I mean, and the amount of manufacturing that American companies are doing in China compared to what they're doing in Europe, I think, is very different. I mean, also, I'm not sure that it's a... I just can't imagine that there would be unanimity in support of going in hard against the United States. I would have thought a more conciliatory approach will be taken. I mean, if you go in hard and he doesn't buckle, what happens? I mean, Europe's already, don't forget, essentially in a, well, not a trade war, but I mean, is imposing a blockade against imports from Russia, which is part, I mean, it's very far from all of the reason that prices are going up in Ireland, the cost of living is rising, but it's certainly part of the reason that we're seeing a rise in the cost of living across Europe. So, I mean, to be fighting it, to be in encouraging sort of a trade war with America at the same time as we're, I mean, what we've stopped importing gas, Europe, that is, has largely stopped importing gas from America in favor of taking a lot more American gas. Then we start a trade war with the Americans. I mean, if you
stopped importing it from Russia, you mean?
Importing it from Russia. Now we start importing Europe. That is, starts importing large amounts of liquefied petroleum gas, which is fracked gas, from America. I mean, to start a trade war with America cuts down your options massively. So I just don't see that as being a sensible approach. No.
Is there anything approaching a consensus on a way forward where you're sitting in the European Parliament?
Well, I mean, I suppose where I'm sitting in the European Parliament, there's a particular, I would say, antipathy to Trump, but that might not be shared as much by every other group. I mean, I would have thought, you know, I think every group is quite different. I mean, I don't know what the S&D group is what their views are. Obviously, some of the more right-wing groups would have a lot more sympathy for Trump and would, but like they're the second or the third biggest grouping in the parliament. So I think very diffuse and very, there's very little unanimity, I think, to be found on anything, but particularly on an approach to America.
All right. Any particular pressure points? One of the concerns is pharmaceuticals, of course, Harry, isn't it?
That's, yes.
That's the one that Simon Harris reacted, saying it'd be unfortunate, if not outrageous. I'm not sure the exact word he used.
Extraordinary bad faith, I think, was the actual phrase that he used. And because, I mean, if tariffs are imposed on pharmaceuticals, it's going to have a very, very grave impact on Ireland. I mean, they do constitute the bulk of our value in terms of export, and you know, compared to every other, he talked about 10 EU countries who have substantial pharmaceutical sectors, but none really compare to the extent of it in Ireland. So that's essentially the goldmouth that the Irish government has to protect above everything else, and that's why he's erecting such a blanket defence.
Okay, we may come back to this in 45 days' time and see where we're at by then. We won't leave Europe just yet, Harry. Ursula von der Leyen's text, the European Court of Justice had a ruling today on a case taken by the New York Times. What was that about?
Yeah, she it was during COVID, and she and the head of another pharmaceutical company, Pfizer, were in contact in relation to her securing vaccines, or the European Union securing vaccines from that company. The existence of the text would have been unknown, but it became evident when the New York Times reported on it, and the head of Pfizer essentially accepted that texts had been exchanged. So the New York Times sought the texts and the contents of the texts from the European Commission, and they were refused. And the case at the European Court of Justice today essentially ruled that the European Commission and Ms. von der Leyen will have to deliver the text and show them. I thought the response of the European Commission today was not exactly blasé, but they were...
Let's hear it. We have actually a short clip here from Paola Pino, who's a spokesperson for the European Commission. She gave her reaction to the ECJ ruling on the release of the text message, but concentrated more on the part of the ruling about the European Commission's explanation for not releasing them as opposed to the case for releasing them. Let's hear it.
What the decision indeed said was that the Commission should have provided a more precise explanation in its decision that it does not hold documents that concern the requested type. In other words, we read it as now the Commission being in the need to better justify how it came to the conclusion that there are no such requests.
Michael McNamara, that the European Commission seems to be of the view that they need to explain their refusal better rather than release the texts.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I suppose, indicative of a particular style that's in the current Commission, which is one of just refusal to accept anybody else's viewpoint, even if the courts have done wrong. I mean, if Donald Trump sort of adopted a similar approach, I'd say there would be, or if his press spokesperson adopted a similar approach in the United States, there'd be much derision from a lot of media, you know.
Barry Ward, come on. Do you think if the Irish Times sued Donald Trump for his WhatsApps in the US Supreme Court that they would have gotten as good a result as they did from the CJEU? Let's focus on the fact that Europe is actually hugely transparent, that Europe passed a law bringing in this transparency. And yes, it doesn't look good and it shouldn't have happened. But let's not try to suggest that this is something that it isn't.
Okay, deal with the substantive issue, though. Ursula von der Leyen sent Mr. Borla text messages, you know, and this was at a time when there was massive competition between people. Benjamin Netanyahu was boasting about how Israel was getting all the Pfizer vaccines because he was in direct contact with Mr. Borla. Boris Johnson was whooping it up over the AstraZeneca rollout. And the European Commission contacted Borla. So, I mean, you know, nobody's quibbling with that. So why not release the WhatsApps?
Oh, no, I think they should be released. And I welcome the fact that the Commission today has said that they are going to give us more information about how that decision was made. I expect them to release the text messages. The rule of law does mean something and they should be releasing them.
But from what the spokesperson said, do you think that sounds like people
are... sure what she said, to be perfectly honest.
Well, she seems to say that they'll explain their refusal better.
Yeah, and look, you can take that interpretation. My understanding from what I've seen of press releases and statements from the Commission is that they are going to go and explain the decision and review the decision, which is what they have to do in light of the judgment. Now, I haven't read the judgment, it only came out today, but I do think they should be released. The transparency law, to my mind, is fairly clear. I don't know what personal involvement Ursula von der Leyen had in that, but I think the decision of the court is clear and I would expect it to be followed.
All right, Sinead Gibney.
I think it's really embarrassing for von der Leyen and for the European Commission. And I think, you know, this kind of cloud over governance and decision making really undermines public trust in our European institutions, which is not where we need to be right now. And honestly, I mean, although it is, you know, I'm heartened to hear the ruling, I'm still not clear. And I don't know, you know, what happened to the messages? Were they deliberately deleted? Are we actually going to be able to see them? Will they be recovered? And I mean, what kind of searches did they do? Now, it does seem, as you say, that will be forthcoming, at least that final bit. But I don't actually know where we're going to see the messages themselves. I mean, you know, as I say, like, it's just at a time when we should be increasing transparency and accountability. This is not good for von der Leyen.
Okay.